Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, and this is the Nolecast. Bud, going to look back at a pretty significant first game this season, pretty significant first win of the season. A lot to talk about, a lot to try to make sense of. Obviously, anytime you start a season, you begin to get some of the answers to the questions that that you ask at the beginning and the opening of camp and the opening of a year. Interesting to see how many of those answers we can try to become confident in and really discuss tonight. How much of it was just a byproduct of the opponent and some of the crazy situations that appeared in this game. But great first win for Florida State. Quite the turn of the first half juxtaposed to the second. And always interested, always excited to do these, but really been looking forward to being able to put together a conversation. So interested and eager to get into this.
Ingram, as you know, the Nolecast is brought to you by Louisiana Hot Sauce. Louisiana Hot Sauce, a great-tasting product. No carb, no fat, as they say. A drop will do you, but two drops won't kill your meal. It's got good heat, but it's not so insanely hot that it'll ruin it if you shake it a bunch. We've had a lot of members and listeners of our podcast text us and tweet us how they're using it. Great on chicken wings, great in the Bloody Mary. I know a lot of people like it on seafood. That's a great product, man. It's a great fit for the Nolecast because we're not big on the hot takes, but we're big on bringing the heat on the podcast. So very much appreciate Louisiana Hot Sauce for the sponsorship and the feedback that they have received from y'all tweeting at Nolecast and tweeting at the Louisiana Hot Sauce account. Has just been incredible. Very much appreciate that. So please continue to support our sponsors. That's how this podcast remains free and popular. Are you tired, dude?
No, not at all, sir.
I kind of am still. We were up till about 4 a.m. Doing stuff after the game. The traffic was just still rolling in. I was amazed that people were still reading Tomahawk Nation. And by the time we got done with the Louisiana Hot Sauce Instant Reaction podcast, it was pretty late at night. And
saw a podcast get posted on the feed at 3:41 in the morning or whatever. That's well done, sir.
I got to 20 minutes. I was like, I'm done with this. This is not going to get any better than it is right now. This is all downhill. Ingram, that podcast lasted 20 minutes, which is only half of the time that Florida State possessed the ball in this game.
Crazy. I mean, crazy to look at, and that'll be where we start our conversation, how much time Florida State had on the ball and how many plays Florida State ran. This is an offense that we pleaded last year to have a little bit more tempo to it, to have a little bit more of a reflection of the modern game and where it's going. 93 plays, but we looked real quickly, can't guarantee this as a completely exhaustive search, but nothing really near it. Had one play, one game against Miami back in the day where they had 84, 85 plays, but 93 plays in a game when I don't think they topped the mid-70s last year. So that's not so much, and really I won't even say that's not so much, that's not at all a reflection of like a different idea as to what Florida State wants to do on offense or anything else like that. Really, it's more a reflection of what Ole Miss did on offense or wasn't able to do. But an incredible time of possession and just an incredible amount of snaps that Florida State put together on Monday night.
We have data for basically Jimbo Fisher's entire tenure as offensive coordinator. 93 plays is the most since he's been in Tallahassee. We know that. We also know that on Jimbo Fisher's radio show tonight, we're recording this Wednesday evening, they said that 42 minutes and 39 seconds was a school record for time of possession. And look, we're very much progressive here on this podcast when it comes to football, we like to think at least. Time of possession does not correlate well with winning. However, on certain extremes, Ingram, I think there's an argument to be made that maybe it is significant. And here, I think, is one of those extremes. When you're talking about an all-time school record for time of possession, you're also talking about an Ole Miss defense that was on the field for an incredible amount of time. I mean, just they never got to come off the field except when Ole Miss's offense just briefly went out there. And here is a really telling stat, right? Ole Miss's offense, every single drive ended in a touchdown, turnover, or three and out, meaning that every drive was lightning quick. Have you looked at the drive chart for Ole Miss?
This is insane. It's insane. It really is. Look at the first two drives of the second half for Ole Miss. Those are the most important. Florida State comes out in the second half, goes down, kicks a field goal, makes it 28-18. Ole Miss responds with a two-play, 8-second drive, and a two-play, 28-second drive. I mean, that's where the game's won, in my opinion.
All right, I'm going to read to our listenership really quickly, and I don't typically like reading lists, but I'm going to do it real quick. The entirety of Ole Miss's drives, right? I'm going to read it fast because Ole Miss went fast. Minute 46, 35 seconds. Minute 24, 219, 156, 140, 23, 9, 36, 41, minute 18, 47, 1, and 2 minutes and 32 seconds. They really took their time there on the final drive of the game. Ingram, did you hear me start a single drive with the number 3 or 4?
No, sir. No.
Yeah. Ole Miss did not have a single drive where they possessed the ball for more than 2.5 minutes. Man, we talk about being a head coach and not just a coordinator at times, and I think the juxtaposition in this game between someone who is a successful head coach and someone who has had some good head coach moments but is also very much still a coordinator type was pretty apparent. Hugh Freeze did not manage this game all that well, and granted, he had a kind of a tough situation at times, but Ole Miss just showed no interest in running the football. Their running backs only got 10 carries the entire game. I know we'll talk about that in a little bit, but Florida State got down in a huge hole here, and the reason was that their offense started out playing really poorly. I mean, 11 penalties in the first half, the vast majority of them on the offensive side of the ball, and yet FSU comes back to win this game somewhat comfortably.
It's as hard of a first half to compare to the second half and make sense of, certainly something that we'll discuss further in this podcast. But why don't we go ahead and start with what we normally do as far as just a general overview and review of what you got out of the various positions. No reason to start anywhere else other than quarterback. Certainly a main storyline, if not the main story of Monday night. DeAndre Francois, official numbers, 12 for 16, 171 yards, touchdown.
On play action.
Yeah, really. Yeah, you're right. Those were his play action numbers. But an incredible evening for him. I realize I just cut his total yardage by about 220. Sorry about that. But yeah, an impressive evening as you could ever hope for from a redshirt freshman, and undoubtedly answered a lot of the questions that surrounded the quarterback position and gives you a nice little base of which to build from.
Jimbo's got a guy, man. I mean, he's got a quarterback. I was really impressed with a lot of things from DeAndre Francois in this game. The first one that I think I want to talk about is how much DeAndre struggled early with a lot of different things and then managed to settle down within the same game, gather himself with the help of Jimbo Fisher and the coaching staff and the other veterans on the offense, and improve during the game. I mean, early on, he made a really poor decision to try and throw the ball out there to Ryan Izzo, which could have been a pick six very easily. He bounced two throws. He was so rattled at one point, and some of this was also the pressure that he was being allowed by the offensive line, by the poor blitz pickups by tight ends and running backs as well. He took like a 7-step drop from shotgun and looked like he dropped back about 20 yards. He definitely had some missed run checks, it looks like. I'm not sure exactly how much freedom Jimbo Fisher was giving him early on to make those. And then he was late on a couple throws. But overall, he improved so much during the game. And we've seen this before from Jimbo Fisher quarterbacks, how they really improved throughout the game. And I think part of that is because we had a nice discussion in our Tomahawk Nation Slack chat with this idea of scripting to score versus scripting to gather information, right? And it's not that you can't do both, But some guys come out and script more shot-type plays, and you really try to build that lead early. Jimbo Fisher seems to be a guy who may script a few. And for those folks at home who don't understand what a script, essentially the first like 15 or 20 plays of a ball game that you run are predetermined, right? That you rep them in practice a couple times. You're supposed to look good at them. Florida State looked terrible at them. But Jimbo Fisher is up there gathering information along with the coaches up in the box, including Randy Sanders, who's now up there this year. And they're saying, okay, when we present this look, here is how Ole Miss defensed it. And later on in the game, they could come back to those looks and throw a little new wrinkle at Ole Miss and help out their young quarterback. And boy, did they ever. I mean, they did some funky shit with play action. Apologize if you got kids in the car for that. They did some influence blocks. They pulled guards. They pulled tackles. They did some stuff that they don't always show, that I think that they really felt that Ole Miss was going to sell out on the run so much. Ingram, those play action numbers you read off, 75% accuracy, 171 yards on 16 throws. You're well over 10 yards an attempt, touchdown, no picks, quarterback rating of 185. Florida State just wrecked Ole Miss with play action. That was tremendous. But I thought Francois also was put in a great position by Jimbo Fisher during much of the game to throw on first down. You know, this is something we've spoken about a lot before, and I know something that you notice as well, that the opportunity to let your quarterback throw on first down when the defense is loading up against the run.
Yeah, it is Jimbo Fisher's, what he will tell you is the most favorable down to throw on, the down in which you get in which it can be the easiest down as far as what the defense gives you. A lot of times the defense will load up to stop the run on first down. That tendency or that habit is only magnified when you have somebody like number four in the background. Absolutely. But what he was able to do on first down was wildly impressive, and I agree with you. So he was able to open up so much out of play action, almost really appeared to let him get more in the flow of the game. A guy who appears comfortable in the pocket, certainly, but incredibly at ease throwing on the run. And what he was able to do out of play action, incredible, significant in what I think it really allowed him to get in the flow of the game, like I said. But first down passing, 16 of 22, just exceptional job from him. And able to take advantage of some of the numbers and some of the situations that are more in your favor on first down as opposed to larger down and distance as you get further into a drive.
And we see some coaches make this mistake. You know, it's like, hey, let's just hand it off twice. Oh no, the defense knew the run was coming, so now it's third and eight with my young quarterback, and I'm asking him to make a really difficult throw. Instead, Fisher, after the first couple series, really got Francois in that nice rhythm. You could tell he was playing with greater confidence. Seemed like he was I felt like the coaching staff did a very good job in this game, especially as it wore on, of getting the play call into DeAndre Francois very early so that Francois could take his time as he took his team up to the line. And we're not talking about Florida State playing up-tempo, but they got the play in early enough to where they could DeAndre could go up there, survey the defense, have a good idea of what they were presenting, think about what Florida State was running, and you know, kind of visualize in his mind where this play would likely go. Credit to the coaching staff for doing that. That was a nice thing. They routinely got the call in with 17, 18 seconds left to go. You know, at that point you break the huddle, you go up there. That's nice. What's not nice is when you got to go up there and the clock is winding down 6, 7, 5, 4. And the quarterback feels rushed. You don't want your young kid to feel rushed like that. So I felt Florida State did a very good job of doing that. As we mentioned earlier, they scored on their final 9 possessions of the game. So did Jimbo Fisher find some valuable information in those first couple drives to later come back and exploit? I think he probably did. Now, the one area that I thought Francois in the passing game was not very good at overall was third down and long, right? They converted 2 of 10 on third down. That's only 20%, not the best. But because of some of the coverages Ole Miss was playing on those third and longs, Florida State was actually able to pick up three third and longs running the ball. Two scrambles from Francois, and one was just kind of a handoff to Dalvin Cook that FSU blocked pretty well on third and 14, and Cook ended up picking it up. Francois was also 63% passing in the pocket with two touchdowns, 7.3 per attempt. Outside the pocket, 67% with 10.4 per attempt. That's from David Hale of ESPN, a really good writer. You should follow David on Twitter if you don't. Shout out to Mr. Hale for hooking us up with those numbers. But that's very good in the pocket and outside. I mean, 7.3 is a little bit low, but I'm impressed by the completion percentage being north of 60%. He also threw two of his touchdowns from the pocket. Out of the pocket has obviously got a spot where Francois feels very comfortable. I thought he did well when Florida State put him on the move. Man, and a lot of times, the way that they were able to scheme this up, how many times did Francois seemingly have forever to throw the football on play action? Like, he would come out of some of those bootlegs, and there was nobody in the frame. You know, it was just like, oh, where's Ole Miss's defense? They're all over there on the left side, and Francois is just over here by himself looking to who he can throw it to. A couple of those, I thought he could have done a better job of getting rid of the ball quicker so that the defense couldn't close on a receiver quite as fast, could have got some more yards. But, man, for a redshirt freshman to come out there and put up 400-plus yards, no turnovers, look very composed for about 40, would you say about 40 minutes of the 60? That's really impressive.
Yeah, it's really hard to put into words exactly the type of performance that you got out of him. We don't want to lose ourselves in hyperbole. Don't want to create a situation of pumping too much into a kid based off one performance. I think people in general probably think too much of what Ole Miss will be. A really depleted secondary that was only further depleted by losing a starter. Second possession of the game.
And their best starter in the secondary by far.
Webster's a massive loss to them. So let's have some honest conversation about what we saw out of Francois. And really, I think your original take was absolute true. Jimbo Fisher has a quarterback. He has an absolute quarterback at the most important possession on the field, and somebody that he'll be able to work with, somebody that he already has a decent amount of confidence in, and it's going to be an awful lot of fun to see how Francois develops. Certainly the first showing is as impressive as anything that we've seen since Jameis, and I almost hesitate to mention that. I don't want to do the DeAndre Jameis dance too much, if at all, really, but a great product in and of himself, and somebody that Florida State fans have a really legitimate reason to be excited for.
100% agree. Also really impressive in that he didn't just rely on one receiver. Like, Bubba Wilson caught 9 balls, but 5 guys caught at least 3 balls, and 8 guys caught a ball in total. It's clear that Francois is comfortable throwing the ball to the open receiver. Now, one other thing I will add here. We did not get to see him go through a lot of progressions, okay? He looked pretty comfortable back there, but Fisher did a great job, and I'm sure Randy Sanders deserves credit on this too. They did a very good job scheming to make sure that the first read would be open. We don't know if how well Francois goes through his progression, because he didn't really have to do it a whole lot in this game. If you look at it, it's pretty clear that how the plays are designed, oftentimes the first read was open. So Francois deserves credit for identifying it, that it was open, throwing it usually on time and usually accurately. That's totally valid and fair. I'm not saying that he can't go through progressions. We're just saying that he really has not been asked to do so a lot yet. Now, there will be some defenses that will challenge him in different ways. There will be defenses that can cover these receivers a hell of a lot better than Ole Miss did, and who won't just fall over themselves every time Francois fakes the ball into Dalvin Cook's belly.
Right. Or give all the receivers 8 yards cushion either. So
yeah, and look, I get that Ole Miss fans wanted their defense to go play press coverage, but Florida State would have scored 60 points on those dudes if they had done that, because there's no way they could have covered them in that fashion. FSU would have just gone up top a lot more and would have hit more of them, and there's a reason they're playing back.
Completely agree with that. there is a reason, still think it's worth noting, and that being a lot of the reasons why progressions didn't necessarily exist. If the first guy you look to is being played off as much as at times Florida State wide receivers were, it's a lot easier to go with your first read.
The NOLCast is also brought to you by Madison Social. The guys at Madison Social and that restaurant management group do a tremendous job. The best place in Tallahassee for food and drink. It's upscale pub grub. It's not your typical greasy spot. Not your typical sports bar. Big time TV selection there. Great craft beer selection. Full liquor bar. They have it's like a chef type menu right there in the shadow of Doak Campbell Stadium in Collegetown. Matt and his crew have been longtime supporters of the NOLCast. In fact, I was able to stop by their Madison Social tailgate they had this weekend. And man, we were right. The line for the bathrooms that we pitched on the last podcast of how the entrance fee to get into that tailgate would be worth it on bathrooms alone. I tweeted out a photo from the NOLCast account. The bathroom line for the public bathrooms was over 100 deep. And we counted it up at one point. Madison Social had 8 private bathrooms. Like I said, if you take a date to a game and she has to wait in the line, or if you have to wait yourself in the line of over 100 people to use a porta potty, that ain't a great day. Pay the money, go to the Madison Social private tailgate. Had a blast, great selection of craft beers from Proof Craft Beer, and got to chat with Matt a little bit. Always a great time. Might be adding a special NOLCast Bloody Mary to the menu featuring Louisiana hot sauce. So look at us combining some brands with some synergy here.
Yeah. Ingram had been thinking about that for a while, I can promise you.
But that's true. I did steal your idea and pitch it. So so anyway, we very much appreciate Matt and those guys sponsoring the podcast. And they know our listenership loves them and keeps giving them great feedback as well on social media. So thanks again. A little Dalvin talk now?
Dalvin talk. Interesting Dalvin talk. Damn near 200 yards total. And also a lot of conversation about Dalvin not looking the same as he did last year, other things. Interesting as to what our final takeaway will be here. I'll let you start off, and I'm curious as to see your thoughts or hear your thoughts.
I think the first thought is that Dalvin is an incredibly effective decoy. We've said the numbers above, 75% passing and 171 yards on 16 attempts for play action. Look, Ole Miss really keyed on Dalvin Cook. Their entire game plan was taking away Dalvin Cook. I watched the little video that Ole Miss put out chronicling their season. It's very clear their defensive game plan was to take away Dalvin Cook, and that's what I would have done too. The question, of course, is at what cost? For Ole Miss, the cost of taking away Dalvin Cook was far too high because they ended up just not being able to cover FSU's receivers at all. Now, Cook still managed to get 101 receiving yards. He got 90 on the ground. A couple times he did some weird stuff, man. I know he cut a couple of those power plays to the backside, which looks almost wrong. Like either he's misreading it, or perhaps like Florida State thought something would be there and then it wasn't. Just due to Ole Miss's alignment. I don't know if Francois checked that to the wrong side or something. Some confusing stuff there that I think you'd have to be in the coaches' meeting rooms to really know why that was done. But two or three times, he kind of makes his offensive linemen look like jerks, right? By going to the backside there when pretty clearly the run should go to the front side. He never really had a super explosive run. I think there was one where he showed good burst. He didn't look fully healthy to me, man. Like, I don't know if he's protecting an injury either to ankle or that surgically repaired shoulder. I know some people mentioned that that turf might have been an issue as well. I know Dalvin in the post game said that he was just tired, but then he said nothing treatment can't help. And our David Visser pointed out, you don't really seek treatment for being tired. You usually go get treatment for something that's not fully right with you.
On the issue of the footing, I will say that anybody that listens to podcasts for a decent amount of time knows that I'm a soccer fan, and I try to spare people too much soccer commentary on this podcast. Although I will note that the turf at what is now referred to as Camping World Stadium that will be tough to get used to saying, is like one of the least favorite places of players to play at the MLS. It's just a tough surface in general. So it's not a great track. I'm hesitant to assign too much of that as the reason of some of Dalvin not necessarily looking like Dalvin. I too share some of your concerns as far as if there's a, if there's an injury there, or if there's some type of something that's just limiting him from being fully healthy. So look, don't need to find out a whole lot of answers against Charleston Southern. If we're sitting here after the third game and still commenting on a running back that doesn't look exactly like himself, then that'll be a little more troubling. But look, here we are having this conversation. Dalvin Cook, damn near 200 total yards. I guess the point that I will make is something that I talked about in fall camp when we talked about the potential number of yards that Dalvin will have. I really don't think he's going to hit his numbers from last year as far as rushing yards. I do think that his total yards will be pretty similar. I'm not saying that he's going to go north of 100 yards in the receiving game and make that any type of habit, but I do think that he will be a larger part of what Francois does, and I think Dalvin is going to continue to be a player when it comes to catching the ball downfield, and that's always been a little bit of a knock that some of the pro scouts have had on his game, an area that we heard that he worked placed a significant amount of focus on in the offseason, and as far as results from game one, it's very much taken a big step forward and becoming a total back.
There's no doubt about it. Him being able to catch the football is a huge deal for this offense. It makes you have to focus even more on him. It makes play action to him even better because you can actually like play action to him, come off it, and then check it down to him. Very impressed with DeAndre Francois not forcing passes in this game, and a number of those were because he had Dalvin Cook open underneath, and he just dumped it to Dalvin, and then Dalvin would pick up 8-10 yards, and ain't nobody ever gone broke making a profit, right? So, you know, just keep taking a profit. That's how you do it, man. Couple other notes here. Florida State has closed practice again all week this week, Ingram, which is really odd. And I know the media is pretty pissed off about that. I think the media, who does not have sources, is even more angry about that. We luckily do have sources and a couple good ones. Dalvin Cook was in the non-contact jersey today. Freddie Stevenson did not practice. I was told, I believe he has an ankle injury. So we'll have to see how that progresses, and if he'll end up playing as Charleston Southern. My guess is that he won't, and they'll probably rest him because you've got Louisville on deck, which I believe is the second toughest game on Florida State's schedule. Don't know if Dalvin will go against Charleston Southern. If he's at all banged, I think I would hold him, especially because you only have 5 days between the Ole Miss and the Charleston Southern game. But there's a guy that deserves some credit in that backfield. A guy that Jimbo Fisher didn't give any credit to in the preseason. In fact, mm-hmm. basically called out for being kind of soft.
Absolutely. Jacquez Patrick, good on you, sir. I mean, in just the he comes in a first and 15 or a situation to give Dalvin a blow, if you will. I believe it's one of the 10 penalties that they picked up in the first half, turns to first and 15. And he catches a little throw from Francois. Picks up 13 yards, and it is easily the hardest that I've seen him run since he's been in Tallahassee. In that individual play, ends up being called upon. The following play, picks up first down with a nice 4 or 5 yard, tough, aggressive run, and good on Jacquez Patrick. Just I focus on those two plays, as it was a great showing of a skill set that he was otherwise a little hesitant to display previously.
He ran hard.
Real hard.
Man, look, you're a big back. I need you to run big. Jimbo Fisher needs you to run big, and he did. And I don't know if it's because he was in front of his hometown crowd. That's an Orlando kid, you know? You don't come out and run soft in front of your hometown. And maybe now that he realized he can run hard in a big game and play to his skill set, maybe he'll continue to build upon that and become the player that Florida State needs him to be. If Dalvin's banged up, man, the one area that I think you could really spell him is on third down. And here's why. Number one, and I said it in our Slack chat today on Tomahawk, if Dalvin's going to take a shot, I want him taking a shot running the football, right? Like, I do not want him taking unnecessary shots pass protecting. Now, on first and second down, you really can't control that too much. But I think Jacques Patrick is easily just as good of a receiver as Dalvin Cook is. He's also a big guy who can stand in there against the blitz. If Patrick continues to improve, it would not at all surprise me to see him play more on third down, because you can spell Cook and not have Dalvin take those shots in pass protection to his shoulder, or you'll have to stand in there and put some flex on that ankle, whatever's actually officially wrong with him. That could be a big-time deal to keep Mr. Cook fresh throughout the season. And I know FSU's been waiting for Patrick to step up. The hope has got to be that he continues to do so. That was important. They actually scored a touchdown on one of those drives where Cook wasn't even in there at all.
Yep, they did. And it was a good look from Jacques Patrick, and good on him. And it'd be interesting to see how much his role may grow. A guy that didn't have a great camp by all appearances, but did display a significantly more aggressive running style, and a style that's indicative of him kind of embracing the back that he is and the type of back that Florida State needs him to be. He does, you know, Florida State doesn't need him to be a back that shakes a couple people in the hole and tries to turn a 6 yard gain into a 25 yard gain. You need to take that 6 yard gain and turn it into a 9 yard gain, because you put your helmet right in somebody's stomach and picked up those hard, those challenging 2-3 final yards of a run where you really finish a run off. So that was really good to see. Don't want to make too much of it, but Jacques was a different looking running back as far as the brief window of time that we were able to watch him.
As far as receivers, I had some kind of mixed feelings about them. First of all, the receivers and tight ends group actually had 3 of the 5 false starts that were called. So everybody's like, offensive line, 5 false starts. Look, we'll get to ripping the offensive line in a minute, and they deserve some. But let's properly attribute where these penalties go to. 3 false starts for tight ends and receivers is totally inexcusable. I'm much cooler, with the offensive line having 2 that I am with damn receivers and tight ends having 3. That's just look at the damn ball, right? Like, I never understood that. I get occasionally offensive linemen doing it because, they say look at the ball, but you're also looking at the guy that's lined up right across from you because he's about to rush into you. Not so much for receivers and not quite as much for tight ends. Just look at the ball, please. That's some silliness. That's got to be corrected, because those are very avoidable mistakes. You know, those are not passion mistakes or intensity mistakes. Those are just lack of focus mistakes. So I would give them probably a D for discipline. You know, that was not very good. I think I would give them an A for getting open. Hands would probably be a B. They didn't have any drops of easy passes that I can recall, but they also didn't really make any tough catches. You know, like, did you see anybody at the receiving corps make a catch where you're like, wow, or like it was really difficult to make? Rudolph had a good adjustment on one ball, but I think a B is probably appropriate for the hands.
Yeah, Rudolph had a good adjustment. I wouldn't say this is a glaring drop, but probably should have had the first ball that is thrown to him after Dalvin drops the ball. And if he wanted to make a really impressive, super tough catch, might have wanted to reel in the second ball that Francois throws to him in the end zone immediately after that. So, I agree with you. A solid performance from the wide receivers, but nothing that immediately stands out. We'll say that good on you, Bobo Wilson, a guy that we've certainly shared our frustrations and had concerns about his limitations. But a guy who ran some really nice routes and made some made plays that really needed to be made, and had one of his better nights of his career.
Yeah, I mean, what, 9 catches for 125 yards? And this is the kind of game that Bubba Wilson shines in, because he has the ability to school people with his route running. Bubba Wilson has always been a strong route runner, and this was the type of defense that Florida State's receivers wanted to see, especially after Webster went down, because you had a lot of guys who were inexperienced. Florida State receivers are generally pretty good route runners. They're just not physical freaks, at least not the ones that are on the sideline. They got some physical freaks on the bench that they can't seem to develop, much like Ole Miss can. Ole Miss seems to be able to have no problems with using young, talented, big receivers. Florida State, for whatever reason, can't get those guys developed and sent off to the NFL, but that's a conversation for another day. Man, look, Florida State receivers did a tremendous job of getting open, and they presented easy throws for DeAndre Francois. How many times was he hitting guys who were just wide the hell open? There were some plays where they had multiple wide open guys, and if you're an Ole Miss fan, you had to just be like tossing your visor on the ground, man. That was embarrassing for Ole Miss's defense. That is I'm trying to figure out how to say this. Ole Miss's secondary is the worst secondary Florida State will face this year of the teams on his schedule that are going to make a bowl game. So, like, not Charleston Southern, not Wake.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Syracuse goes to a bowl. But of the teams, like, of the top seven teams that are probably going bowling, Ole Miss is going to have the worst secondary, I think. So you kind of got to measure this with a little bit of grain of salt. I'm more impressed by what Francois did than what the receivers did, because Francois had to do it under pressure. The receivers just had a field day against some guys who none of the guys out there for Ole Miss in the secondary would start for Florida State. And I think a lot of them would be third string.
It's fair. Bud, should we go ahead and move our attention to the at times frustrating subject of the offensive line?
Yes, Ingram. I believe it is time for our Louisiana Hot Sauce Hot Take of the Week.
Hot Take of the Week. This is something we will periodically drop in, and as always, really fortunate to be able to pair with a sponsor like Louisiana Hot Sauce, be able to pair with a sponsor that allows us to have some pretty natural tie-ins to things, and just want to thank our audience, incredible amount of engagement with us, as always, we appreciate that, but particularly those of you who have chosen to tweet at the Louisiana Hot Sauce Twitter account or any other forms of social media. That is very much appreciated and is a great thing that you can do in support of the Nolcast. So want to take that time to both thank our audience, thank our sponsor, and Bud, with that, I will give you the floor for the Louisiana Hot Sauce Hot Take of the Week.
All right, this one was tweeted at us many times, and it is that the offensive line did not get any better than last year, Ingram. We have always been sort of about debunking narratives here on this show and presenting truth to the best of our ability. And that is probably the hottest take of the week. Now, if we had decided to select this at halftime, the hot take of the week would have instead been let Jimbo Fisher go to LSU, right? Because I got a lot of
fire Charles Kelly
and fire Charles Kelly. Exactly. Yeah. I got a lot of those. So that is not true. The offensive line did not dominate Ole Miss in this game, at least not on the whole. They, in fact, I think, would probably deserve a grade of like a D in the first half and probably like a B in the second half, which is averaging out to probably like a C, maybe a C-plus type grade. But they absolutely improved. If you can't see that, I really suggest like picking up a book and learning a little bit about football, or just listen to our podcast like several times over. In the first half, I thought they had a couple big-time issues. Issue number one is that Derek Kelly did not look anywhere near as good as we have been told he had looked in practice, right? Like, we were told the drop-off from Eberle to Baselli, if Eberle can't go at center, is really big. However, the drop-off from Kareem R to Derek Kelly is not very big, at least not based on what they saw in practice. Now, Ingram, that's not true. Kareem R, just from what I can remember about last year, played a lot better than Derek Kelly played in this game. Derek Kelly did not look very comfortable out there. He was late off the ball at times. He sometimes lacked physicality. I think sometimes he had miscommunications with his offensive line. He also stepped on Rod Johnson at least twice and maybe three times, causing Rod Johnson to look like a huge jackass on national television by falling over backwards when it was, in fact, not Rod's fault. And ESPN somehow didn't pick up on this fact, and I'm sitting here looking at this, as we're in the SB Nation, the main room for the .com side of things, and they were about to run a story, and I said, hold up, doesn't Walt look like he trips his ass? And they're like, oh, I think you're right on this, yeah. And so I pointed out that Derek Kelly is naturally a tackle, and when you play tackle, your pass sets are oftentimes wider, right? You don't have to really worry about where your feet are in relation to other players as much because you're pass protecting on the edge. But when you play guard, you have to be a little bit more controlled with your pass set because you have guys on both sides of you. On several occasions, Kelly's footwork was not very clean, and in fact, he ended up stepping on Rod Johnson.
If he was wrestling, I would give him a lot of points for some really impressive ankle picks because he's either stepping on or tripping the hell out of his left tackle more times than you might realize at first look.
He also might be the worst slow dancer ever. Like, can you imagine him dancing like with somebody else? He's probably stepping on their feet a lot.
Wasn't sure where you're going with that, but yeah, now I got it. And I imagine wouldn't engage in that for multiple reasons. But yeah, that would that'd be challenging and does give you a little bit of hope for a nice little bit of improvement is when you do get R back. That you have a little bit more of a natural interior offensive lineman, and that might have an impact on the way that Johnson played as well. I know a lot of people are pretty quick to be critical of him, and to an extent, I understand. Not a guy that appears to have made at least this is again only after one game, but doesn't necessarily appear to have made the jumps that we would have potentially expected from him after watching him his freshman year.
I agree with that. I think my number two issue with the offensive line was that, Ingram, we got it right on Rick Leonard, man. Our practice intel was exactly right, that run blocking, pretty good. Play action, again, you can use natural aggression, but the whole, like, straight-up pass blocking thing?
Yeah.
Didn't we say for a couple weeks now, hey, Brian Burns has smoked him in practice. Like, you know, when he goes up against Walker, it's a no contest. They have got to help him out. I don't understand why they took – how many drives was that? I'm trying to think of when they really started chipping really hard with Izzo. Because for a while, they left that side open. And I'm sure it was some sort of attempted tendency breaker or a different look for Ole Miss. But I think they went four drives. I really didn't need to see four drives of Rick Leonard trying to pass protect without help. You know, maybe two drives just to see kind of just how much he would get beat would be good enough for me. Not that Dalvin Cook had the best pass protection game. I know he blew at least one, and I think another one too, which I looked like Fisher was not real happy with on the sideline. He had a big time ole on one of those. But if we know it coming out of practice, don't you think? Man, I don't know. I just kind of felt it took too long for them to help him out. You have to know what limitations your players have and help to supplement those while augmenting their strengths. And I feel like they didn't necessarily do that much. Now, the offensive line also, in general, especially on those first four drives, really lacked intensity. I mean, you're talking first four drives for Florida State. You know, you're talking about 25 plays on the first four drives. For just about 100 yards. That's only 4 yards a play. That's pretty damn bad. I feel like Ole Miss came with a certain energy and intensity in this game, and Florida State did not match it early on. And that, I don't think, has anything to do with play calling or trying to take shot plays or trying to gather information or anything like that. It just seemed like the whole offense lacked energy, and I think that was most clearly highlighted by the offensive line early on. They did not come with a mindset to dominate. That was really disappointing. But there were some positives about the offensive line that I think people are not picking up on. And if you're not, I'm going to point them out for you right now. Number one, some of the plays that occurred were not their fault. Okay? There are a couple times where Francois should have checked the play differently, in my opinion, and the play was essentially DOA. The offensive line had no chance to block it how it was called. This is something that we harken back to Jameis. Why was Jameis so effective? because he would routinely grade out 95%, 98%. So you had so few plays who were just completely dead in the water before he ever snapped the football. With a redshirt freshman who's not named Jameis, that's not going to happen quite as much. Number two, tight end and running backs have got to do a better job in pass protecting when they are called upon to help. And running backs have to hit the right hole as opposed to doing other stuff. We talked about that a little bit with the Dalvin section. Number three, they are blocking a really talented Ole Miss front. Some of the stuff Ole Miss people told us turned out to be really overstated, Ingram. But there were three areas in this game, and we'll talk about two of them later, that I thought Ole Miss fans were accurately assessing after watching this ballgame. Quarterback, receiver, and that defensive line has a number of NFL players. That is a really talented defensive front. So you know they're going to get beat on a couple of occasions. But I thought they did a couple of really nice things in the last 40 minutes of the ballgame. Number one, they adjusted very well to Ole Miss's their slanting and all the games they're running and the twist. A number of times, especially in the second half and in that third quarter, Ole Miss would run those twists and bam, they would just stone those guys. And Francois had all day back there to throw. That was really big. Also credit to Francois for not being totally rattled after the first 20 minutes where the offensive line almost got him killed. And they also did really well in short yardage. You know, that was a major gripe last year of everybody. This game, 7 runs in short yardage situations, they converted 6. 6 of 7 against that defensive front. Pretty damn nice, man.
A lot to look at, a lot to try to make sense of, a lot to review. I do think that the short yardage is probably the most positive thing that I look at and try to take away from this. I do think, to an extent, the initial conversation that we had, the opening of the podcast, plays a role. How much of a role is hard to say, but I do think the amount of plays that Florida State had, the amount of time that Florida State's offense had the ball, perhaps played a large role in the offensive line looking better as the game went on, strictly just in the fact that Ole Miss just kept putting that defense back out on the field, even when they scored in the second half. It was in such a manner that it almost did them a disservice in how quickly you put that unit back on the field and took away some of their ability to produce. Look, when it doesn't matter what you scheme or what you draw up, if your defensive line is tired and doesn't have burst off the ball, you can stunt, you can slant, you can do all kinds of things. It's more times than not going to be effective. So in general, I think the offensive line probably had a better performance than people would think just after their initial first kind of in-game TV watch. But there are some reasons that I'm curious how much played a role into their level of play improving throughout the game.
I think that's a really good point. Now, Ole Miss does have really good defensive line depth, especially on the interior, but 93 plays is a boatload of plays. And they also had to get discouraged at times when they would pass rush and Florida State would hit them with some quick game stuff just because FSU's receivers would school those guys, and they did get a lot of off coverage.
Hey, y'all, this is Judson, producer of the Nullcast. This concludes the offensive recap of the Ole Miss game. If you go, you'll see the defense and special teams recap also uploaded along with this one. You gave me something.